This is the Formation Lab.
Welcome one, welcome all to the Antiques Disaster. That's right, it's not even a roadshow. It's just a continuous disaster. The painting of Dorian Gray of motorsports. We keep getting better. It keeps getting worse. You keep coming back to us. It's the Formation Lab. I'm Luke. I'm joined, as always, by my partner in crime, Timothy Timoteo. How's your Sunday treating you?
It is going well, sir. We apologize to the listeners at home. We gave you one really, really fast compared to our last episode and the gap in between. So, yes, we're back. We're here to surprise you. We're kind of like the Kramer of podcasts. We just kind of pitch up whenever we can / want. But we had one big story that we wanted to cover this week, and a few other smattering of little stories, that McLaren has landed Mick Schumacher as their reserve driver. And by landed, I mean gave him a little bit of shelter from the storm.
At this point, I'm not sure what team Mick drives for. If he were to say that he's back driving in the number one seat in Haas, in Haas for 2023, it would not shock me.
I think I'm actually excited about Haas in 2023 with the old timers. I think I might just have to root for them just because they're the old timers, and I kind of share the rickety nature of their beings right now.
You know, and speaking of Mick Schumacher's back, which is, not back, but he's going to be the backup driver for McLaren, which I think he might become an Oscar Piastri type, where it's like, you know, just cook him a little bit longer in that oven, especially in a McLaren / Mercedes oven. And I would be shocked if it's the last we've seen of a Schumacher on the grid, as it were.
He'll be back at some point. I'm sure there's going to be a shakeup. There actually have been rumblings recently that McLaren may lose Lando Norris if they can't provide him a championship winning car, and he might make the jump to a top tier team like a Red Bull, Ferrari, or Mercedes in the future. But they're trying to put that to bed. They're trying to get him a good car. But yeah, he could fill in that gap and become the Oscar Piastri. But we'll find out. I can't actually verify any of what they're saying in any press outlet, but there have been several sectors of social media that are popping up saying that there are rumors that McLaren is just downright nervous because they don't think that their car is going to be very competitive in 2023. I hope that rumor isn't true. I've seen it on several outlets, but I cannot verify their sources. So let's just go ahead and say that the scuttlebutt on social media seems to be roiling right now, but take all of it with a massive grain of salt.
Yeah. I mean, there's did Mercedes not say that for every one of the like 7 years in a row that they were just royally and I think our car's going to be a little worse this year. Red Bull's really coming on up there. They could really challenge us.
Well, there was a little bit of tongue in cheek with Toto Wolff in those moments. It was a little bit of gamesmanship. Zach Brown is saying it probably because he means it. I don't see him as the bluffing poker face type.
I would agree with you. He's definitely not, you know, the permanent poop eating grin of what Mr. Christian Horner, but would they tell us, hey, we got a dynamite car this year? Hey, we got a terrible car this year. I don't know. I've been conditioned to not trust any team whatsoever, Tim. And understandably, I'm a bit skeptical. We'll find out. Not in the Bahrain testing. We'll find out in the season opener.
yeah, we will. We do have practice coming up in less than a month now. Ooh. In Bahrain, which will be interesting because the last few years, at least the last five, testing has been in Barcelona in the preseason. So I'm excited to have at least a little bit of change in my testing. But Luke, there is one more thing that you and I are skeptical about. Or at least I know for my part, I am. And that is the big announcement that came out this week with the introduction of the Red Bull livery, which is, you know, surprise, surprise, completely unchanged.
Did you notice they tongue-in-cheek played like, oh, we might see something a little different with Red Bull this year?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and we're going to see Ferrari throwing out anything other than red. Yeah,
Oh, hold
that's
on,
just
hold on.
gonna.
It's going to be a matte maroon with, hold on, I'm channeling my inner Ferrari. They've
Oh,
signed EWT. It's going to be a bright pink accents.
they do not have the balls to do something that cool. And but Ferrari, Fred Vasseur will be taking the helm this year. I'm excited to see what he can do with that team. I do consider myself another member of the Tifosi this year because of Carlos Sainz. But no, Red Bull also made another little ancillary announcement that they are going to have a new engine partner in 2026 when the new engine regulations roll out in Ford. Now, for anyone at home who's thinking Ford and Formula One, what are you guys on about? You have short memories, or you are brand new since the Drive to Survive series came out. They have had a very long history in Formula One. Only the past 20 years has it been spotted, but the last team that they owned is actually the current Red Bull outfit out of Milton Keynes. And so that is where they will return as an engine partner. Now, that's interesting because it is not an engine supplier. They are a partner in research, development, and money to help the Milton Keynes outfit build out their engine development unit next door to the car itself in Milton Keynes. I think it's a pretty cool venture for Ford to take on. Ford in the 70s and 80s actually had this star-spangled run of success with their Cosworth CV engine, and it delivered world championships to the likes of James Hunt, to the likes of Niki Lauda, to all manner of truly great champions. And or not Niki Lauda, I'm sorry, I'm just thinking of Hunt versus Lauda. I do know it was Hunt that was in at least one of those cars. But it was a fabulous run for them. And then they tried to do a works team with Jaguar in the 90s, and it all kind of fizzled and it failed. And in the early 2000s, they sold to Red Bull because they just wanted out at that point. But they are coming roaring back, and they will help in the research, development, and financing of the engine team. Ford is hoping to get more advancement in their hybrid technologies to drive their car production throughout the world, in their efforts to become more green, in their efforts to become more advanced. So I'm excited to see what happens. I have been rambling a very long time. Good Lord, how did you let me go this long?
Well, Tim, sometimes I just see you on a roll and decide to let you talk yourself into a hole. But it's easier to forget, especially I mean, if you didn't know in the first place, but it is easy to forget when you're naming the top three most successful engine manufacturers of all time. I believe Ford is third all time in wins as an engine manufacturer. So, sir, it's a brand that has a lot of F1 history, just not super recently. That being said, you mentioned, oh, they want this hybrid. That let's not kid ourselves. All right, they're in this for the exposure, the sponsorship, the eyeball dollars. Ford is not quite the brand that it was amongst our demographic compared to what it was maybe in the 70s, 80s, 90s.
Isn't that a tagline for a local St. Louis radio station? 70s, 80s, 90s, and today. Because apparently we're going to jump over 30 years.
Yeah, and today, which is implied to be the 2000s, but buddy, that was 20 years ago.
And they still use that ad. God bless them.
But anyway, I do find it funny, off topic. 70s is a genre according to the radio. 80s is a genre according to the radio. 90s is a genre according to the radio. You don't hear 2000s.
Nope, or the
Even though,
2010s. We're in the 20s now.
even though both of those, the 2000s and the 2010s, are very distinct stylistic in the same way that the 80s was. Like, you're really gonna tell me that like American Idiot is, not emblematic of its time in the same way that like Running Up That Hill was? Really?
Well, I think it's just going to be interesting to see how people look back on this time, because maybe it all did end and we're just in the simulation now, Luke. Who knows? None of this
Speaking
is
of
real, and all of it's
simulations,
real. Yes, simulations.
I'm not sure if this Ford sponsorship is real. Not in that it's not a thing, but Red Bull powertrains is in Milton Keynes. Ford's just gonna move on into Milton Keynes. Let's not kid ourselves. They're gonna send some of their people over there. They're going to badge it. But Red Bull is, it's a partnership. Ford is not making the engine. They're sending some of their guys over and some of their expertise over to the plant right next to Red Bull in MK and just kind of going, all right, we're here to help, guys.
That is precisely what's going to happen. And that's why I think it's a really actually kind of an interesting move from Ford because you get all the credit because no one really, unless you're wonky or watch F1 all the time and know what you're talking about, you really can't tell the difference. There are some doofus people out there that think that Red Bull ran TAG Heuer engines. Yes, absolutely. A watchmaking company made an engine. That's right.
Yep. Well, it's all mechanics, Tim.
It is all mechanics, but I will say their timepieces are gorgeous, and I will never insult that company. They have,
I'd be willing to bet that if TAG Heuer applied their engineering into the engine sphere, they could make a decent engine.
Probably. They're geniuses, and they are responsible for one of the most iconic watches of all time in the history of cool, because Steve McQueen wore it at the Monaco Grand Prix, the Monaco Square watch. So they are heavy metal cool,
but you know, it's all of the benefits of we're Red Bull, wink wink, nudge nudge, without having to do any in the grand scheme of things of the hard work to form or run a team, because that's right. Red Bull, and this is part of the reason why their Porsche deal fell through. Red Bull wanted to run their own team. Porsche was going to team up with them, and Porsche wanted to have a little too much. Well, why don't we do this? Why don't we do this? And we want to run 51% of your team, blah, blah, blah. And they said no. So what should that tell you about Ford's involvement? Red Bull goes, you're not to sit aside. You provide ancillary support. You know, it. I don't mean to poo-poo this. It's awesome to see Ford back there. But let's not act that this is anywhere as near as impactful as, say, for example, the oomph that General Motors would bring to F1 through an Andretti Cadillac bid.
No, it wouldn't be that same thing, but I think that for both
should GM choose to and Cadillac choose to construct an engine, which is a whole nother thing. I think they would, but anyway,
I think that will be their ultimate intention.
Yeah.
But no, I will say that, you know, Renault will be their first engine supplier. That's just how it's going to go until GM can get up to speed.
And also the engine regulations are due to change, I think, in 2026.
Yes. That
so why would you create an engine when the earliest you're going to race is probably 2025 for one season just to turn around and develop another one? No, that one season, you're just going to run a Renault and try and start making it as soon as possible. Maybe you're, instead of 2026, you're rolling it out in 2027, but
possibly. Speaking of which, I will say this. It will be interesting because I think that Ford will get the most out of it, and it's going to be the most appropriate relationship for Red Bull, and for from a marketing standpoint, it'll be massive. Ultimately it'll be good for both parties, and hopefully GM can step up because the onus is much larger on them.
So speaking of which, the FIA will officially open to the bidding process to allow up to two teams to enter Formula One as early as 2025. And it will go over the applicants, and that is due by April 30th. And I believe a June 30th, at the latest, will be a decision. There's some standards that need to be met from that, and I'm trying to see if I can find it, Tim, but you know, Andretti Cadillac is doing that.
I think that this is another move from MBS, and F1 will be saddled with the Andretti team. I would also anticipate a new entry works team, a manufacturer stepping in and starting something and making a big, huge, stinking statement. But we'll see, because two is very specific. So there has to be someone else out there, or maybe your Alkali comes back and we're stuck with Mazepin and the Russian team on the Formula One grid. That would be downright hilarious. But yeah, neither here nor there. That's Speaking of your Alkali and their former Haas team, Haas unveiled their livery this year, and it looks pretty darn good.
Yeah, I wanted to hit on that too, though. We do have a couple launch cars so far. The Haas is going primarily black, which between me, you, and the wall, dear listener, expect a lot of more black liveries. I believe Mercedes has said that it will be silver this year, but do anticipate a lot more black accents than maybe you're used to, because along the scheme of last year, it's really hard to hit that weight window. And if I'm not mistaken, the minimum weight went, the minimum weight changed this year. So teams are going to be even more, yeah, let's scrape off a little bit of paint. There's no,
it went down 2 kilograms.
Yeah, down 2 kilograms, which can be saved a good chunk of that in paint. And it's not even that you're needing bare carbon fiber, different colors of paint, thanks to the compounds in the paint and what's needed to make the dye. Different colors weigh differently, even if it is a gloss black versus a gloss white versus a gloss red. That does change the weight of the car. So expect a lot of black.
I would expect that, for sure.
There's a reason I believe that dark blue that Red Bull uses is it's not as light as it could be, but it's not one of the heavier paint colors, which is, again, another reason they don't change.
Yeah, it's been matte for years, so they don't have to have that extra sealant to make it glossy, which will save weight. But other than that, Luke, I didn't see any other big headlines this week.
I did want to go over, there's some criteria that F1.
The criteria, yeah.
Yeah, did you see this? The criteria, like, list for F1 teams to join?
I briefly glanced at it earlier this week when MBS dropped it. But that's what I was going to say. MBS has set himself up for a war with the F1 people. We will get saddled with two new teams, but MBS will lose this war for sure.
Okay, so here's some of your criteria. The technical ability and resources of the team. The ability of the team to meet and comply with its obligations under the F1 sporting, technical, and financial regulations. Okay, first one. Second one's fine. First one... okay. I mean, I could argue against the technical ability and resources of some of the teams that have competed over the last decade. And I'm not even talking about Borussia. Have you seen what Williams has tried to roll out in some years?
Yeah. But I think it's interesting because we did have an influx of new teams before, and I believe that they will have PTSD from that.
Whether the team and all individuals proposing to participate in ownership, control, or management of the team are fit and proper persons.
Fit and proper. So that's a pretty big definition.
Yeah, as I say, there's only stand-up people in the history of Formula One, Tim.
We are the moral authority in Formula One.
If you're looking for a sport filled with good guys, I mean, that's F1, baby. No skeletons in our closet.
None.
Considerations of sustainability, equality, diversity, and inclusion, and societal benefit of their entry. because if there's one thing Formula One teams are known for, it's positive societal benefit.
Yeah, I think they missed the mark here.
I mean, I understand being like, okay, we're going to put this on there. And like, obviously, if you're the Vladimir Putin race team, like, yeah, we're not going to be in there. But really, like, look, I'm not trying to be a hater here, but go read the annals of F1 history and you will see that societal benefit and whether it's owned by fit and proper persons, like as in like good people, you will not find outside of like the International Olympic Committee and like the Sepp Blatter era FIFA, like you will not find a better rogues gallery in all of sport than Formula One.
No.
People who are still kicking around the grid to this day.
There's no good way to put that. There are some really bad characters that we've been aligned with, but I do think it's because of Haas in recent years with, you know, playing footsie and, you know, climbing into bed with a Russian oligarch to You know, going with what's his face from Rich Energy, who was just a really strange, deeply morally bankrupt person, that gave everybody the creeps, to Vijay Mallya,
Yeah,
to,
I was thinking
oh
about
my God,
Vijay Mallya. I'm like, you
yeah,
don't even have to go to like the
in
Arun
the
Bennett years. Like, you could just go
no,
right to Vijay Mallya.
you could. And back in the 90s, you had a Nigerian prince that magically came out of thin air to sponsor a team, and then none of the money showed up and he kind of aced out. So, he
Rich Energy. I'm telling
F1
you,
is
this
the
William Story character, he's got the money. He just, you know, it's he's got the money. Don't worry, Tim. He's
don't,
got
yeah, chill.
William Story's got the money.
But they also, were the first ones to fall for the Nigerian prince trick. So, hey, take it with a grain of salt, guys. It's it is interesting to see them draw that line.
I find it interesting. I understand too that like yeah we're just we're not gonna let like an actual hate group form a team here, but also like I just thought it was worth a bit of a comedy look. Like,
It is
oh
pretty
yeah,
funny.
there's
It,
only
it's it's kind of
proper stand-up citizens allowed in this sport.
pretty pretty rich coming from them.
Good choice on there on Rich. Ability of the team to raise and maintain sufficient funding to meet its financial obligations to allow participation in the championship.
That is the only one they give a shit about.
Yeah, at a competitive level. And oh, here's another one: a detailed business plan, including financial projections for the first 5 years of the project, and the team's experience and capabilities in the automobile or motorsport sector.
And that is where they will knock out most of the applicants.
Yeah. What's interesting is the team's experience and capabilities in the automobile and/or motorsport sector sounds like a pretty pedestrian rule if you're a Drive to Survive era watcher. That has basically never been a rule, a prerequisite to join Formula One,
Nope.
like ever.
No. Frank Williams just hustled cars. That's it.
Yeah. Red Bull. You might wonder how Red Bull got in there. It's easy. The company just bought a team and said, we're racing now. There
Yeah,
was no like,
and
there was
that,
no like, oh wow, but the no. It was exactly how we, as weird as it sounds. It's like if Coca-Cola just bought a car and said, all right, we're gonna enter Formula One. That's what happened with Red Bull.
well, 7-Up did the same thing for half a minute.
Yeah, it's I there's some of these that it's just like I'm interested in how this works because it's clearly never been a priority in this sport. And I know people are like, oh, don't want to watch a Manor or a Marussia. And it's like, Tim, answer me this. I didn't think watching Marussia was that bad. I didn't think watching Manor F1, like,
Well,
I'm not watching the race to watch Manor. All right. Are they a rolling roadblock for the guys in first place? Sure. But like, did that ruin your enjoyment of the race? Did it make it worse? They were just
no,
there.
the P they're mad about Marussia because Jules Bianchi died in the Marussia.
I
That's what
understand.
I don't think it's anything beyond that. Yeah, I genuinely think the animosity is bullshit, and that it is mostly big established teams trying to protect their stock price. And protect their perceived value and not have more to compete against. Personally,
Let
I
me tell
think it's
you,
just dumb.
just as a fan, and Tim, you actually can speak on authority of this because you went to it last year. Even if even though there are only like, 27 full-time IndyCars, the Indy 500 is always a field of 33. And in that field of 33, they're not all bangers. All right.
Juncos Racing.
JUCO's Racing, Buddy Lazier, the old farmer who managed to buy an old chassis every year and raced for how many ever years he did. Buddy Lazier was slow as hell. Pippa Mann, slow as hell at the Indy 500, but they made it in. All right. Tim, do you know what we could have a much sharper field if we kicked those guys out, but do you know what I'd rather have at the Indy 500? A full field of 33. I can't ever remember being in an Indy 500 and watching Pippa Mann plug along. She's a very talented driver. She's just always put on a freaking awful car. Like that's not on her. Right? But I can't remember ever watching Pippa Mann go by at noticeably slower and engine humming along in a different tone than everyone else and going, I wish she wasn't here.
I think that we need to think more base about this. It's the only resistance to it is the teams right now. And you have to remember that they tip to stern, soup to nuts, everybody in those teams is a competitor. And the first rule of competition is to eliminate your competition. And what, how better to eliminate them than to prevent them from existing in the first place?
Yeah.
So that, I think, is it. They don't want more competition. They don't want to split, because they have to split more of the pie. They have to split more stuff, more prize money with them, and there's less to go around for everyone. So they are happy with the current environment. They would like less teams, not more. That would act to the benefit of the Formula One grid. They've been waiting for Haas and Williams to die forever, but they've hung on there by the hardest, and they're pissed about it. So I would say that, yeah, F1, the teams need to realize that it's flexing the other way, than that they need to actually work for a living.
Yeah, and I have seen that take on Twitter a lot of times too, about the, oh, well, you guys weren't alive during the Marussia years, and it's like, well, or the Manor F1 years, and it's like, I was watching. It did not change. I think that is, you need to really think about what teams are saying, because if teams should not be forming your opinions. Just throw that out there.
No.
So we had a couple other news. I do want to hit on, we're recording this on Sunday night. It'll go out on Monday night. I do want to hit out, the NASCAR Clash is happening right now at the LA Coliseum. Tim, I know you and I want to give a shout out to what is a pretty darn cool event. Our buddy Derek is out there, and that's a cool event. I saw a headline. You remember, they're shortening the California Speedway, right?
Yes.
Auto Club Speedway. They're shortening it. As that happens, they might be without a points race in Southern California for 2 years while they're doing that, right?
Yeah.
Because the Clash isn't like a points race. It's an exhibition that's technically also qualifying for Daytona. So they're like, well, what if we made the Clash a points race and moved it back in the calendar? So Daytona opened, then you had the Clash that was a points race. And part of me goes, Tim, and we'll keep this short, because neither you or I are full-on NASCAR experts here.
Nope.
But part of me goes, oh, that's cool. And the other part of me goes, oh, well, now that it's a full-on points-paying race, it almost kills a little bit of the magic, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it needs to be, if you're going to do it big. Don't give it to a funny little race because it's in L.A. That's a shameless publicity stunt. It kind of makes it NASCAR, like we talked about, they're trying new things. I don't like everything they do,
but they're trying, which
they're
is
trying
more than some gotta, series.
You gotta give it to them, they are trying. So I don't know, we'll see. It might be fun.
Also, the other big-ish news is that Las Vegas is looking and attempting to get a full-on 10-year extension before the first year race ever starts. And it looks like they are going to be locked into 2032, Tim.
Wow.
I will tell you, first off, I don't know if the first one is going to be I don't know if the first race is actually going to be like a banger in terms of like being well organized, but I do think this is going to end up being a pretty good event.
Hopefully.
I think so. And I think by the end of it, if only there wasn't so much oil money involved, which I know is rich considering we're talking Las Vegas, this really does seem like it's a, it should be a season ender, doesn't it?
It does, but you know, we can't always get what we want, Luke.
That is fair. I will mention too that I believe turn 17. I like some of these turn names according to the Wikipedia track map. Now, granted, it has the list of the places, but Tim, tell me if there's anything more American than being like, all right, we're going down onto the boulevards. You're going through the Mirage Kink. That's turn 13, by the way. Going down now, it's the Cosmopolitan left. That's a left, right, left, up onto Harmon, and take a left on Top Golf.
There is nothing worse than that. That's pretty abysmal. Especially the Mirage Kink. I mean, every sex worker ever better be popping on that thing.
Oh, gosh.
Sorry, I see a business opportunity, and I got to point it out. I see the business opportunity. I got to call it out.
They are imploding the Mirage, as the killers have told us. I'm wondering if that's going to get a new name. It just occurred to me that, like, every single turn name is going to be named after a whatever landmark is by it, because this is almost all landmarks, even like the Top Golf. It's like, oh, look, it's Top Golf. Turn one is Harbor Island. 6, 7, 8 is the MG Sphere, the Sphere Complex.
Oof.
Go take the Sphere Complex over to the Wynn. Turn left at the fashion show.
Oh my God.
I hate it. I love it.
Derek has just texted to say he is decked out in McLaren gear. So, hey, Derek, don't worry. I know that you can feel a little bit elitist maybe in your Formula One gear at a NASCAR event, but don't worry. I have done it myself. And actually, the people at the Midwest Drag Racing Series were very open and welcoming, and actually, yeah, you know, all came up to me and be like, hey, how'd the race go today? So don't worry. We all speak motorsport here.
We do. I wish this episode was longer, folks, but I'll be honest with you. We don't have any car launches to go off of. I think that's just about it is. Just
yeah, about I'm doing a Formula One Drive to Survive rewatch of the last season to kind of get myself back into gear for that to drop here in a couple weeks. And yeah, we're going to see some more cars and start to see some tires on some pavement here in a minute. So yeah, we're almost there.
Almost there. So I'm going to be out next week, Tim. I know we mentioned our super producer, Dylan, will be stepping in. Yep. I will be out in the home of the Vegas Grand Prix, a town that I believe is called Henderson. I'll be snowboarding. I'm flying into the desert to go snowboarding. I'm not going to lie with you people.
That's a weird thing to do, but that's okay. You do you. Me and Dylan will hold down the fort over here.
Well, I will talk to you guys in 2 weeks. And again, folks, wish you had a longer episode for you. But, well, that's that. Until next time, I'm Luke.
I'm Tim. Later.